You are listening to an ADIS Journal podcast.
Welcome to our listeners for our podcast, HER2 Mutant Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer Podcast, Finding Patients. I'm Dr. Vivek Subbiah, a medical oncologist, chief of early phase drug development at the Sarah Cannon Research Institute, Nashville, Tennessee. It is my pleasure and honor to welcome Dr. Martin Dreitrich today for this podcast. Dr. Dreitrich, do you want to please introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you, Vivek. I'm Dr. Martin Dreitrich. I'm a medical oncologist with the U.S. Oncology Network at the Cancer Care Centers of Brevard in Orlando, Florida. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Thank you so much. So today, the podcast is titled the HER2 Mutant Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer Podcast, Finding Patients. This is episode 2 in our podcast series. This focuses on the critical challenge of identifying patients with HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer. We discuss why timely and comprehensive testing for HER2 mutations is vital for optimizing patient outcomes and how next-gen sequencing and molecular profiling are integrated into clinical practice. This episode covers the practical aspects and evolving standards of HER2 mutation testing, including the use of tumor and liquid biopsies, and addresses real-world barriers such as cost, access, and awareness. We also explore potential solutions like reflex testing and collaboration with molecular pathologists to overcome current diagnostic challenges. This episode emphasizes the importance of accurate and early molecular diagnosis in ensuring patients receiving the most effective personalized therapies as the treatment landscape for HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer continues to advance. So let's talk about what we spoke in our previous episode. The previous episode discussed how HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer represents a distinct, aggressive, and challenging subset of lung cancer that requires specialized targeted treatment. Here, we discuss when, who, and how to test for HER2 mutations in patients with non-small cell lung cancer. So let me pose this question to our expert here, Dr. Martin Dreitrich. Why is testing for HER2 mutations essential in non-small cell lung cancer, and when should it be done?
Well, just to take a step back, when we test non-small cell lung cancer, which is a really a very diverse genetic field of opportunities, HER2 mutations is only part of a broader panel. So we don't specifically test for HER2, but we really want to offer every patient with a non-small cell lung cancer diagnosis, independent of stage or histology, the opportunity for testing. HER2 mutations are obviously captured in the approach to a molecular profiling of disease. And I think it's very important to identify these early events that are critical in the development and propagation of cancer before we even start thinking about therapy selection. So we want to get this done as part of the diagnosis process of non-small cell lung cancer. It's really very easy to find the best evidence-based approach once we have a full understanding of stage and molecular setup, in addition to obviously patient-specific factors. So this has to be done at the very very first step. We want to get next-generation sequencing done by liquid and tissue biopsy up front. This is part of the guidelines. We've seen in many studies, including those that you have participated at MD Anderson, that if we can currently provide these testing approaches up front, we are faster, more comprehensive, and in many ways beneficial to patient treatment. So we want to really focus up front. We do have to understand that molecular profiling is really a multi-layered approach that requires DNA, RNA, and protein analysis. So the full width of alterations here need to be understood from the very beginning, and they should be tested and retested upon progression. Obviously, they undergo genetic evolutionary processes. And when we see HER2 mutations or overexpressions, we can match patients to targeted therapies in addition to the standard chemotherapy approaches that we have with both tyrosine kinase inhibitors and antibody drug conjugates. So identifying the most options for patients and the most effective options for patients with the quest of precision medicine.
Thank you so much. Again, the message is loud and clear. Lung cancer is a poster child for precision oncology. Again, my personal belief is that, for every patient with non-small cell lung cancer, we need to do comprehensive next-gen sequencing testing at diagnosis. That includes HER2 mutation testing with all the genes. So we can't guess, but we need to do NGS. Testing for HER2 mutations should be carried out in initial diagnosis of lung cancer, particularly since HER2 mutations have demonstrated strong response to targeted therapies such as tyrosine kinase inhibitors and antibody drug conjugate. This means that patients can get effective treatments earlier in the course of their disease. Thank you so much. So let's talk to Martin about how are HER2 mutations detected. So can you discuss about how HER2 mutations are detected to our broad audience here?
I think there are a number of technical aspects to the detection up front. And I think one of the nice ways that we've understood next generation sequencing is that we're really not looking for specific aspects of the of a gene, but that we're able to really cover the full length of the HER2 alterations. We know that there's a number of different classes of HER2 alterations that are oncogenic and likely actionable. The most important ones, obviously, the intracellular kinase domain mutations themselves. They increase affinity to ATP and induce configurational changes that activate the process. But we really need a technology that covers transmembrane and extracellular kinase domain mutations as well. So this, in addition to the width of information from all the genes that we can test in one assay, next generation sequencing is really the standard of care and really supplanted single gene testing for patients here for analysis. We need from the very get-go identify the best sample sites. I think the review of imaging upfront is very helpful to get sites of biopsies that are reliably accessible. We want to get as much tissue as possible. There's never going to be a shortage, both for standard of care practice as well as for clinical trial. The availability of sufficient sample is critical. And then we obviously want to handle the sample with diligence to ensure that we get a histological diagnosis. That's still important. But less and less so without the information that we get from molecular profiling. So getting DNA and RNA sufficient samples is really critical. We can get DNA from the bloodstream. I think there are some approaches that will also try to select some RNA from the bloodstream. It's a very short-lived and low quantity kind of extraction. So DNA from the bloodstream is very helpful. But the DNA snippets that we detect from the cancer are different from the large DNA fragments that we can get from a tissue biopsy. It actually lends itself very well for small mutations like in HER2. So liquid biopsy probably very similar to EGFR in the detection of liquid biopsy here. I think for fusions and higher molecular alterations, it may be more challenging. And I think it's not liquid versus tissue. I think liquid biopsy carries promise of being less invasive, maybe less side effects for the patient. It'll capture different sites of disease that are probably more homogeneous in the beginning of treatment. And obviously, the faster turnaround time is not just a theoretical feature of liquid biopsy, but it also leads to an accelerated time to starting a treatment. So this complements each other very well. So it used to be tissues versus liquid. I think at this point we are really seeing that they are complementing each other in their different strengths quite well. The better depth of analysis on tissue, the faster and more accessible way of getting liquid biopsies. And we do want to get tumor biopsies. I think this is not going to be replaced anytime soon, but liquid biopsies really belong. And the guidelines now include the liquid biopsies in a concurrent fashion as a diagnostic testing option to enhance the diagnostic accuracy and therapeutic decision making. I think that's a clear practice pattern. I wouldn't make the stage dependent anymore. Precision medicine has reached the metastatic space, but in many other subtypes, also early stage disease after surgery, after radiation. So it can be done reflexively on every patient without ever over-testing a patient. I think information here is power, and we should exploit both technologies, liquid NGS and tissue NGS, plus the immunohistochemistries as a way to fully characterize the cancer and really have a very detailed discussion with our patients about what options match their tumor biology the best way.
Thank you so much. Well said. So the message is loud and clear here. Next-gen sequencing is recommended for all patients newly diagnosed with advanced non-small cell lung cancer to inform optimal therapy. The gold standard for next-gen sequencing is tumor biopsy, providing high-quality, reliable DNA samples directly from the tumor. Liquid biopsy is emerging as a crucial complementary tool for next-gen sequencing. So, although tumor biopsy is still the preferred method for initial diagnosis and comprehensive molecular profiling, many clinics are integrating liquid biopsy into initial testing concurrently in parallel with tumor biopsies to enhance diagnostic accuracy and therapeutic decision-making. So, let me ask the next question. We were talking about the next generation sequencing. So, Martin, how do you think next-gen sequencing is utilized in clinical practice? So, this is to discuss about the real-world utilization of next-generation sequencing.
Well, I think in all fairness, when I look at the evolution of next generation sequencing, it was very clear that precision medicine, with its 20-year track record, has had a delayed implementation. I think that there are many factors that would explain it. Initially, we had problems getting coverage through insurances, access, and I think sometimes there was a lack of understanding of the importance of precision medicines. We did have the advent of immunotherapy that captured many subtypes of non-small cell lung cancer that were quite helpful. So our testing patterns weren't really sufficient. We saw in many real-world evaluations a biomarker testing pattern in the US of about 50% of patients that were diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer between 2018 and 2020. And I think there were many additional initiatives to enhance testing and really make this a hard stop in the guidelines, both in NCCN and in ASCO. We really can't match our guideline recommendations without next generation sequencing. We have seen the introduction of liquid biopsy in 2023 for HER2 mutations as part of the broad molecular profiling panels. We probably had them before, but it wasn't really relevant because we didn't have any major treatments. So the HER2 mutation testing has gotten significantly better. I think the numbers are showing that that's not optimal. We really need to get as close to 100% as possible. And I would say, for practical purposes, the 100% liquid biopsy testing is available for every patient. We may not have tissue on every patient in sufficient quantity, but this should be routinely included for treatment. Now that we have HER2, we really need to understand that the HER2 mutation detection is the first step, but translating this and contextualizing this into the disease space and using it for the best implementation of HER2-directed therapy is sort of the next frontier for us to ensure that the education is reaching all of our colleagues, that they know that HER2 mutation testing is now much more relevant than it was just a few years ago for non-small cell lung cancer.
Thank you so much. Again, we need to do comprehensive next-gen sequencing and diagnosis for every patient with non-small cell lung cancer. I think here, genomics is the diagnosis. And HER2 mutation testing was added to the NCCN recommendations in 2023 as a part of the broad molecular profiling. So HER2 mutation testing was not often routinely performed in clinical practice, partly due to historic lack of HER2-directed therapy. Now we have HER2-directed therapies for this deadly disease. So let's talk about HER2 mutation, right? What are the current challenges with HER2 mutation testing in non-small cell lung cancer?
Well, I think a lot of it is awareness. I think the diagnostic guidelines have included HER2 testing in the guidelines now, but I think there's still a lack of awareness of how good the options have become for targeting HER2. And we discussed this in our first podcast. We had that discussion around the antibody drug conjugates that were first introduced for HER2 mutation subtypes. But now, also the arrival of tyrosine kinase inhibitors in non-small cell lung cancer that are matching the disease biology quite well and are actually very, very helpful. We do have a concern about cost. Next generation sequencing is an expense that can be perceived as expensive. I think insurance coverage has gotten better, but there are still some assays. They cover more than 50 genes, for example. They're oftentimes deemed to be experimental and may not be covered. So there is a barrier in testing and a lack of awareness of how the testing here can be utilized. And because of the later development, some of the original registrational trials we have did not include them specifically or exclude them specifically, like like we see for EGFR and ALK. So it is sort of a contextual development of data that we need to appreciate here. But it is now standard of care. It is the biological central feature of disease when we see a HER2 mutation that really determines disease biology. It helps us lean on the EGFR experience. There's a lot of biological and clinical overlap. So detecting these mutations is really critical.
So again, there are challenges with HER2 mutation testing. So can you comment on how oncologists working in community settings might integrate or access such testing if not routinely available in the institution?
Right. I think it really depends on the individual practice setting. I think we have help from the electronic medical records in our network. We have an automatic prompt to order these tests, if not already done by a reflex pattern. I think we're at a time in precision medicine where we can take this back to our pathology colleagues and talk about the ubiquitous need for testing and really stress the idea of after identification of a non-small cell lung cancer diagnosis to reflex test for next generation sequencing. I think this is now most appropriate in cases where systemic therapy is considered. Really very few exceptions to that rule in the very early disease space, maybe where we don't consider systemic therapy. But I do think it's important, and I think that's how the data connects to the guidelines, is if we develop a pattern of testing where we utilize external help, reference laboratories, and also the utilization of external help through molecular tumor boards in the interpretation and implementation of therapies, that we can develop testing patterns and treatment patterns in the community setting that really allow us to provide the best standard of care in any geography. I think those resources are now available, and we should really exploit them. And I think the obstacles have gotten smaller and smaller for the use. It's gotten more complicated, but I think that's the positive side effect of having more and more options.
Thank you so much. Again, I see that, right? So NGS panels and companion diagnostics are increasingly supported through accelerated pathways. However, as you said, reimbursement remains uneven, especially outside major academic centers. So we really need, policy advocacy and pilot programs here. And again, there are several programs that enable community oncologists for expert interpretation. And the good news is that beyond the niche boutique academic centers across the community, I think the commercial labs, the commercial sequencing companies offer scalable solutions for integrating next-generation sequencing into clinical workforce, right? So workforce and workflows. Training in next-gen sequencing interpretation and access to molecular tumor boards, as you said, are critical for confident test utilization. Again, this cannot be underestimated here. I think we need to have a genomically fluent workforce so that we can use and utilize all these precision medicines in the future. So, Martin, what can be done to overcome the challenges, specifically with HER2 mutation testing in non-small cell lung cancer?
Yeah, I think if I were to have a wish that I could voice, I think the adoption of reflex testing would be critical. I think this will accelerate the time to treatment. It'll make the first visits for non-small cell lung cancer patients more meaningful because oftentimes we don't have the molecular profiling and cannot make any significant recommendations. So the reflex testing is really a process initiated by the pathologist, supported and requested by medical oncology. So there is a multidisciplinary component immediately upon detection of a non-small cell lung cancer diagnosis. And again, I would stress that this is independent of histology. While we see an enrichment in certain mutations in adenocarcinomas, we do see many mutations in squamous cell carcinomas that transcend from adenocarcinomas or have their unique subset for which research investigations are quite interesting. And we want to really offer patients both standard of care and research developments in the non-small cell lung cancer subset. The expedited way of obtaining this process here is important for the capture capture of all mutations and genomic alterations and ensure timely treatment decisions. The molecular pathologists, and oftentimes they come from the reference labs, may be helpful partners and consultants in the interpretation of these results. And they're particularly helpful for healthcare providers that may cover a broad array of disease spaces and that may not have an academic support network, as you were mentioning. So I think those are great resources to have for the molecular oncology interpretation in the community. The HER2 mutation comes reflexively. I think this is now clearly integrated, and the technology certainly has the width and depth of full HER2 mutational coverage. And as the mutations gets linked to more and more treatments that are emerging within the HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer space, it's also important to be able to go back to prior tumor samples, if necessary, to either review the reports if available, or to add on additional biomarkers if they weren't tested initially. So we really want to have the current part. Obviously, pragmatically speaking, you could also get a liquid biopsy to see what the current state of the art is, even without requiring additional samples. But we always have to make sure that all the options are available and tested for at the time that the patient is receiving treatment. So if a patient had surgery a year ago and certain mutations weren't linked yet to their respective treatment opportunities, we really want to address that with the laboratory, seeing do we have everything covered, because it may be the best option for the patient that may not have been highlighted at the time in the reports. Maybe the data is already available but hasn't been updated in the process. So these lookbacks are really critical for us to have the best set of data available to make a decision treatment at each point.
Thank you so much. So again, for our listeners, to overcome the challenges of HER2 mutation testing in non-small cell lung cancer, so I think we can use several practical strategies. Number one, implement reflex testing. This reduces delays in identifying actionable mutations, ensure broader and more consistent testing coverage. Number two, standardized testing protocols. Use next-generation sequencing that include HER2 mutations, especially exon 20 insertions. Develop and adopt HER2-specific immunohistochemistry scoring system tailored for non-small cell lung cancer to reduce variability in the interpretation. Number three, expand the use of liquid biopsy for patients with limited or poor quality tissue samples. Circulating DNA, ctDNA testing offers a non-invasive alternative. This is especially useful for monitoring disease progression or even finding resistance mutations. Number four, the most important one, educate the healthcare provider teams, educate and train the healthcare provider teams. Provide training on recognizing HER2 alterations in non-small cell lung cancer. We also need to ensure collaboration with molecular pathologists to interpret complex or ambiguous results. Number five, re-biopsy retrospective testing. Reassess archived tumor samples for HER2 mutations, especially when new targeted therapies become available. They can identify patients who were previously untested or misclassified. Number six, integrate testing into clinical workflows. Embed HER2 testing into standardized diagnostic panels for lung cancer. Ensure that HER2 results are available before treatment decisions are made. Finally, again, here I would make a personal plug, encourage enrollment in clinical trials for non-small cell lung cancer. Again, that's very, very important, because as a field, we have done a lot in the last decade, but we have to do a lot more. So thank you so much, Dr. Martin Dietrich, for being here. So in conclusion, as several targeted therapies, including tyrosine kinase inhibitors and antibody drug conjugates, are becoming available and have shown promising results in HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer, comprehensive genomic profiling at the time of lung cancer diagnosis is essential to identify patients with HER2 mutations so that they can receive treatment appropriate for them. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this podcast. Thank you.
You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Journal Podcasts with your preferred podcast provider, or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements and copyright information, please visit the article page on the journal website. The link to the article page can be found in the podcast description.